Good morning, everybody. How are you all doing today? This is a cavernous room, isn't it? We've got people way out here to way out here. It's almost representative of the size of this convention center. We had some interesting... We won't talk about how difficult it was for us to find this room. My name's Paul Andrew, and I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team at Microsoft. I work on networking, performance, data center topics, and some of our new features we're looking at for multinational customers. So that's what I do. I'm joined today by Paul Collins. Paul?
Hi there. I'm Paul Collins. Is my mic working? I can't hear it. Yep, good. I'm a senior program manager within our Office 365 CXP team, and I primarily look after Office 365 networking, connectivity, performance, with our customers. So I spend a lot of my time around Express Route at the minute.
And I'm Jeff Mieliff. I'm a program manager, same team as Paul, basically just management overhead. So I'll cut it short there.
Well, Jeff's going to do more than management overhead at this talk today. So we have lots of exciting stuff we want to chat with you guys about. This is actually the second of two talks that we're doing on Azure Express Route for Office 365 today. The first talk, which was started at 9 a.m. this morning, if you didn't get there, you can catch the recording. In it, we walked through 10 steps for implementing Azure Express Route for Office 365 and setting up that Microsoft peering. So that talk was much more on a procedural type. What are the things that you need to go one by one? This talk is going to be more about some of the scenarios and discussions that we want to have, and we want to share some of our experiences in working with customers and what it's really like, what it's been like doing that. So this will be more of a, a consultative type of talk where we'll tell you about some of the experiences that we've been through. So we'll go to the agenda. So we're going to talk about good scenarios for where Express Route for Office 365 is a good choice. Then we'll talk about how we think about the difference between SaaS services and IaaS services in terms of cloud networking, and why there are some differences that you need to be cognizant of when you're setting up your networking. We'll spend a bit of time talking about traffic management to Express Route. For your actual Office 365 users, how do they connect over the LAN, across the perimeter network, over your WAN if you have one, and over Express Route and over the internet to Microsoft? So we'll talk in some detail about that. We'll talk very briefly about why the internet is still required, even if you're using Express Route, and what that means. We will talk in some detail about asymmetric routing. And we'll also talk about Exchange Hybrid as an example of an inbound service where you have to particularly watch for asymmetric routing. Just a quick plug for asymmetric routing, because we don't want any of you guys to hit that. Asymmetric routing is where you send a request across one circuit and the response comes back on a different circuit, and a firewall or the host or something says, I didn't expect that response on that circuit, so it drops it. That's what we refer to as asymmetric routing. And then we'll talk about our preferred architecture for managing client traffic going out. So the first section is me. So we'll talk about the scenarios for Express Route for Office 365. Now, we do have some guidance around when to use Express Route for Office 365. And we have had some customers run into some problems with using Express Route on Office 365. We first launched Express Route for Office 365 almost a year ago, October 1st last year. And because of some of those problems, we now have a review process that we look at each customer plan or their intention on the scenarios before giving approval to go ahead. So today that is a required step to go through that review process. The way that broadly or generically we want customers to think about that is that Office 365 as a SaaS service is designed to use the internet for connectivity. We have 65 points of connection with between Microsoft's network and the internet. And when you're connecting over the internet, you get the benefit of all of those different connections from wherever your users happen to be, assuming you have internet breakouts there. We want to make sure that people are successful when they go with direct networking and express routes. So we do have this process involved at the minute for reviewing that. And there's two scenarios where we really recommend using express route and going through that review process. One is where you work either in an industry or have some kind of government regulation that you have to adhere to that requires direct networking. And what I really mean by that is there's a requirement not to have your email connectivity between clients and servers go over the public internet, and or a requirement not to have your SharePoint document access go over the public internet, or the same thing for Skype for Business. So if you have a regulatory requirement you're operating under, it's worthwhile taking the extra work to implement ExpressRoute for Office 365 and set that up. So that's one of the scenarios. The other scenario is for Skype for Business. So Skype for Business, obviously, Microsoft instant messaging, voice, meetings, all sorts of great stuff that you can do collaborating with other people in real time. The thing about real time is you want to have really great network performance, and QoS is one of the technologies that we use in Skype for Business for getting that network performance, quality of service, which marks individual packets on the network to say that these are higher priority. They need to go first because they're related to a voice call or a video call. And so Microsoft actually strips QoS markings from packets at our internet connectivity points. Why do we do that? Because the internet can't be trusted. So we strip those at our internet connectivity, but we allow them through on express route. So if you are using Skype for Business for meetings or other types of communications, ExpressRoute is the technology that you need in order to be able to get QoS into Microsoft's network. So those are our two scenarios, and I'll go through a little bit more of the detail of this new process, because this is a review and approval process for use of ExpressRoute. Any existing customers should continue to use ExpressRoute for Office 365. This is not going away. This is just so that we can make sure that people are being successful with it. It does not mean that we're going to be stopping using direct networking in the future. It's great technology. New customers do need to have their Microsoft account team make that request, though. Any customers using ExpressRoute for Azure Private or Azure Public networking, highly recommended. No review process. Go straight ahead. Go ahead and set that up. Great technology. Much easier to use without the inbound services that we have in Office 365, without that extra implementation work. We're going to recommend a network assessment to look at what types of connectivity you need. And we have a few different network assessments. We actually talked about those in the last session, so we won't spend too much time on those. We also always recommend an implementation project for ExpressRoute for Office 365 to make sure that you get those that connectivity, that network routing working really well. We want to point you to our documentation. Last thing on the slide is there is a technical block. If you don't go through that review and approval process, there is a block which will result in an error coming back if you set up that Microsoft peering. That error appears in two ways. If you set up the peering with PowerShell, you'll get a specific message come back on the PowerShell window, which will point you to a KB article that gives you details about this review process. You actually don't get that if you go through the Azure web portal. You won't see that same error message, but you will get an error setting up that peering. So I started talking about why these changes. When we first came out with ExpressRoute for Office 365, that's the Microsoft peering, there was no review, there was no block, but we did see a number of customers fail at these routing changes that were required. And typically the way I've seen customers fall into this trap, this routing trap, is that they have really experienced networking people, and they're familiar with internet connectivity, and they're familiar with their LAN, But what they're not familiar with is a separate direct networking connection to the same internet host as their internet connectivity. And it's by creating this second path that we make things just a lot more complicated for people to deal with. And so that's one thing that we found. The other thing that we saw was that people were deploying ExpressRoute for Office 365 specifically to get more security. And yes, it does bypass the internet for a lot of the data that you send to Office 365, which is great. But we don't actually provide security technologies on that network connection for you. So if you are looking for specific security devices, those have to be implemented in addition to setting up ExpressRoute. And we saw people not doing that and expecting the same security that they had on their internet connectivity where they did have security devices. So we talk about that in this review that we do today, and that's why we have these changes.
And Jeff and I have calls almost constantly with customers that go through this process now. And the key thing is we can now catch you at an early stage before you've spent your money, and then we can talk about the benefits, the pros and cons, the complications of setting this up, the 2 to 6 month planning process, and make sure that ExpressRoute is the right thing for you, and you fully understand what has to be done in advance so nobody causes an outage when the circuit goes live. So that's the real driver behind the process, as Paul just said, is to make sure that circuit is used for the right reasons and doesn't cause an outage.
All right. So the next thing we want to talk about is contrasting software as a service, SaaS, and infrastructure as a service, or IaaS. So if we think about infrastructure as a service or an Azure VM or a VNet that you have provisioned inside of your Azure subscription, this is where Microsoft is providing these infrastructure capabilities and these building blocks that typically you will build some kind of solution on top of. And these are primarily IT-facing. Sometimes they're developer-facing or people who are building out these solutions. They typically have private IP addresses that you've allocated that are inside of your LAN already. And you'll use those same IP addresses on any VMs, servers, or VNets that are inside of Azure. So they don't typically have connectivity to the internet or public-facing connectivity. And they're normally isolated from anything else that's going on. So if you contrast that to a SaaS offering, and specifically Office 365, we have services in a variety of different Microsoft data centers. We have different services, so Exchange might be in a different data center to SharePoint, but more importantly, some of our ancillary services might be in different data centers again. Our directory service might be somewhere else. And we also rely on some public services. The very obvious examples are domain name system, DNS, and CDN. We require those to be available as part of the Office 365 service. So this is all built up, Office 365 as a service, from these various component parts. And what you get is your users are able to use Outlook and OneDrive for Business Sync and Skype for Business to connect into these services at the back end. But you don't have that kind of granular control that you see with an infrastructure service of where is the point service that I'm connecting to, the server, which data center is it in. None of those things can be specified directly. You're using the service and using the functionality for it rather than using a particular server and something that's running on that server. So this makes it a little bit different. We also definitely use public IP addresses. And so when you're working with Office 365, we have all of these front-end servers. We publish, of course, these public IP addresses, but there are a lot of them, and they are not private IP addresses. So it's very different to the connectivity that you will have with an infrastructure as a service thing. So if we think about what this looks like, we need to look at treating these very differently. We have these private versus public IP addresses. We have the extension of your local intranet versus connecting to public systems. And we've got different sets of IP addresses there that you need to look at. If you look at the three different peering options that we have with ExpressRoute, they are separated out and you turn each of those on individually. The simplest one to set up is Azure Private Peering, and that allows you to connect to any of your VNets and VMs that you've created inside of Azure. These are going to be using private IP addresses, most likely, that are allocated from an RFC 1918 set, a 10 dot something that you use in your local LAN. And so that should be pretty straightforward, pretty easy to set up. We don't need a lot of security requirements on those because it is just an extension of your internal network. You should think of them as machines that could be in your next room but are actually hosted in Azure. And so maybe they're a little bit further away, but they're basically like a machine that's in your next in the next room to you. The next one is Azure Public Peering. And Azure Public Peering will have public services that are hosted by Azure for connectivity to those. And that's a little bit different, but still there are no inbound services where Microsoft is going to connect into your network from those servers. The third one, Microsoft Peering, that's where all the IP addresses and routing for both Office 365 and CRM Online are. And we have both inbound and outbound services, and we use public IP addresses. So there's a little bit more to think about setting up there. And so key question for you there is, how are these two things handled differently? How are these two different types of connectivity handled? And how should they be terminated on the customer's network? What should that look like? So let's talk about that in a little more detail. I want to draw a diagram here for you. So we've got the on-premises network for a customer. You can see we've got a user there and a server. And then we've got Office 365. So Office 365 is inside of Microsoft's global network. It's a lot of different servers and a lot of different data centers in that network. And the simplest way to connect to that is across the internet. So there's the internet there. Now, Office 365 you can connect to from anywhere on the internet, so you might have users inside of your LAN. You might also have users out in coffee shops, in hotels, at different locations that have internet connectivity. So they're going to be out there connecting from wherever they are. And then you've got your users inside your LAN as well, there they are. And then from inside your LAN and from out on the internet, you're going to be connecting to other services that Office 365 requires, so we've got those there as well. Okay, and now we add in this separate piece of network connectivity, and this is what ExpressRoute gives you. It's this dedicated connectivity from your LAN into Microsoft's network. You notice it's missing out a couple of pieces there. It doesn't include those users who are out there on the internet. It doesn't include those internet services that we require as part of Office 365. So those are still going to be there, those two other pieces of connectivity. And your users are going to be able to connect from the internet into Office 365. And your users on your LAN are still going to have internet connectivity. We still require reliable internet connectivity at each office, even though you have this dedicated connectivity. And you can see why here, right? It's pretty obvious when I put it on this diagram here. But we don't provide DNS, apart from for Microsoft hosts. We do have DNS servers, and in some cases you might get routing to them. But for the general case, we don't provide DNS. You can't look up random websites with DNS through ExpressRoute. All right. So here's the firewalls that you're going to want to have here. You're going to have a firewall and security devices for connecting to the internet. And you're going to want to have a firewall for connectivity onto ExpressRoute as well. Of course, Microsoft has firewalls, but that's only for protecting our network. You guys always want to have a firewall on a network connecting to another party like that. All right, so let's move on. And here's our next piece. We'll talk about Paul will talk about traffic management.
Okay, so in the previous talk, we went through the reasons why you might want ExpressRoute, but if you've got to that stage and you've put the circuit in or designing the circuit, you've then got to think, how do I get my traffic from my clients to that ExpressRoute circuit? I mentioned in the previous session that you can just think of ExpressRoute as a routing override to the internet. It's a different way to get to the same Microsoft global network. So different customers have different requirements, and there are different methods to get that traffic from the client rather than going out the internet pipe to that ExpressRoute circuit. So the first one I'll talk about is using proxy servers. Sounds like a kind of silly thing to do. If you want premium networking, high-speed networking, why would you put a proxy in the front of that? Well, there are reasons where I talk to customers that they have very valid reasons to do that. One, it's very easy. You can just control the client, say, all of this traffic that can go via ExpressRoute, fire it at this proxy, and then it can spit that traffic into the ExpressRoute circuit. So that means the customer doesn't have to handle external IP addresses on their network. They don't have to handle the BGP routes that we release, because you're just connecting client to proxy, and then it can send the traffic into the circuit. So that keeps the internal routing table small. Some customers might need to update 600 internal routers to handle the increase, the 600 plus routes that come in, not cost effective for them. So again, this is a solution. Others are just unable, for whatever reason, or unwilling to have public IP space on their internal network. Some customers I've spoken to about this have to manage multiple subsidiaries' networks, and they don't have full control end-to-end of that network, or it's very difficult to get everyone in agreement. So by using internal IP addresses to just essentially tunnel that traffic to the endpoint, it gets around that problem. So there are valid drivers why you would want to do this. Again, as I spoke on my session yesterday around Skype for Business, it's not ideal to push Skype for Business through proxies. Exchange and SharePoint, as long as those proxies are well managed, well scaled, will cope going through proxies. The other thing to be aware of when using this model is that a pack file is required on the client to manage that traffic. Which traffic goes to the internet, which traffic goes to the ExpressRoute proxy. So this is a relatively simple design where you've got two customer sites, and we've got two proxies here. At the top, you've got the internet proxy, and at the bottom, we've got the Office 365 proxy. So this would have been explicitly put in for the Office 365 traffic. It is at the edge of the ExpressRoute circuit, and we can control sending traffic from the client to that proxy and then send it down the ExpressRoute circuit. So we don't have to worry about any of the networking in between the client and that proxy. So what happens if we have a USA and EMEA site? Again, it's pretty easy to do. We just need to set up another proxy in the USA and one in Europe and change the pack file for those clients per region to point at the correct proxy for them. So again, implementation is pretty easy with this method. So how do we manage the client? This is the difficult piece. We have to know which traffic is going to the internet and which can traverse that ExpressRoute circuit. So we have a URL and IP list that we publish online, and that's constantly updated with new IPs, URLs. And you can use that. It's got a very clear column saying this URL goes via ExpressRoute. I say it's very clear. There become some complications around that because of there's a different set of URLs for each service, and we split them out, and there's a lot of overlap. So what I've done this week is hopefully published tomorrow or early next week is we're going to publish a pack file that will show you which URLs need to go to ExpressRoute to help this kind of method work. With that, I'll just show you what it looks like. Now, the complication here is that when I went through this, we have wildcard URLs, which you can see here. That's the condensed list of ExpressRouteable URLs when you remove overlaps and anything that's covered by a wildcard. As I say, this will be published very soon, so you can just take a copy of this, and we'll update it every time we get an update. So there's a lot of wildcards there, and when we went through this, we figured out there are some, that list at the top there, sub-URLs that are covered by those wildcards which cannot use ExpressRoute. We like to give you a challenge. So this pack file explicitly lists those URLs that have to use the internet. So you can call them out at the top of the pack file, send them to the internet proxy. Then you can send that traffic to your ExpressRoute proxy and send that traffic down that circuit. So that's how we would manage it. And we'll publish this and keep it updated for you online, which should help with that kind of management of that method if you go down that route.
Yep.
So that's our proxy option. I wouldn't advise that option unless you absolutely have to do it. Direct networking is the best way to connect to our services. You don't have a man in the middle that's interfering with that traffic, has to terminate and reconnect sessions, etc. But proxies will work as long as they're well-scaled, well-managed, and well-configured to work with SaaS services. So our other option, for me, this is the most elegant, and I'd say most customers I talk to are looking at this method. Does that fit with your discussions? The direct BGP route, non-BGP routing. Essentially, this method allows the customer to send the traffic to an edge router, which makes the decision there where that traffic goes, whether it goes to the internet. So this allows a low level of internal network configuration, much like the proxy model, but we remove the need to have proxies. So the client just spits the traffic onto the network, and then an edge router will pick that traffic up and say, okay, that's for express route, that's for the internet, and it will route it for you. So what does that look like? So the internal network is in green there from those two sites, and we don't need a pack file in this model, that we will just send the traffic out direct on the internet using the public IP address of the endpoint we're connecting to. That edge router file, or whatever device it is there, that is in view of the BGP circuit of the express route circuit, so it knows which ranges are routable down that express route circuit, and it will make a routing decision there whether that can go down express route or not using that BGP update. So quite an elegant way of doing it. The thing is with this model, it becomes more complex if you have multiple sites, multiple express route circuits. So in this example, we've got, again, North America and an EMEA site. So it can be complicated, but some customers find this very easy because this is how they work already, that they have internal network policies that send any traffic that's not internal to an edge router to make a decision. So in this case, we have an edge router in EMEA and an edge router in North America, and internal network policies deal with which one is used for which client. It also gives us a failover model should something go wrong. Very easy, you know, the circuit should take over rerouting that traffic if one of those circuits goes down. One of the key things to note on that diagram, when we talked about it in the previous session, is different NAT pools on each of those circuits. Again, this is down to route asymmetry. So we want to ensure that traffic that goes out of one circuit comes back in that same circuit. And to do that, we need to ensure that each of the NAT pools do not overlap. So I've just talked about most of these, I think. In this instance, the client sends the connection to the actual TCP port, the IP address of the endpoint we're connecting to, not the proxy, obviously. But we have the advantage of not having to handle those 600-plus BGP routes inside the customer's network. It's handled at the edge. So it keeps those routing tables small. That customer that has 600 routers that need updating if we're going to bring these routes in doesn't become a problem. They just send them to the egress. And that edge router, as I say, makes a decision based on the BGP information that comes in from Microsoft via that express route circuit. And the internet traffic will be sent to whichever egress the customer designs. Negative of this, you have to be able to handle those public IP ranges within your network. So again, that can be a challenge for someone that would force them into the previous model, where that connection is done to the proxy. And the benefit of this is there's another lack of management that needs to be done on the client side. You just configure your client to send traffic direct, push it on the network, and let the network deal with where that's got to go. And that bottom point there, again, we talked about it in the previous session, is some customers want to use that URL and IP list that we publish online to do that route management on that edge router. So if we look back at the diagram before, that edge router in EMEA and the USA, if you were to use that URL and IP page online to put routes into those routers to make that decision, that is not dynamic enough to work quick enough for our services. So those BGP route updates that we provide may come before you've noticed that URL and IP page has been updated. Or if your security team is on holiday and they miss that update, then things are going to stop connecting. So what do we do? There are a multitude of options here. We publish our entire IP space, so you can allow that. You can allow Microsoft's BGP communities in and manage it that way. And our guidance at the end has a full list of how you would manage that. But don't use that URL and IP page to do the routing. And our final option, which some customers I see using, is they just let the BGP routes flood into their network. So they use eBGP to get the routes into the edge router, and then iBGP internally. So every router within your network has view of Microsoft's IP space for Express Route. So each router can make a decision on where that traffic goes. So again, with a multi-site model, this becomes quite complex for some customers to manage with very complex networks. Again, we've got a very strict requirement here for NAT pools not overlapping on each of the egress. And the BGP route modeling needs to be done by the network team to ensure that in that North America site, we can use a community, like a regional community, to ensure that my office in Miami uses a particular express route circuit, my office in San Francisco uses another express route circuit. And that has to be managed internally. So again, it's another level of work that needs to be done to manage all this. But it works for some customers. So that model, you have to consider how far you let those routes propagate. And you need to be very, very careful with this model. Asymmetric routing is, I would say, most likely at this model. Because let's say we have an Exchange hybrid server, and you decide the inbound connections are going to come over the internet there, but we're not doing proper source NATing on that. If that Exchange hybrid server is in view of that BGP route, the response is going to go back down the express route circuit rather than at the internet how we want. So I've mentioned route costing, route management is all needed by the network team here. Now, that becomes more complex the bigger the size of your network. So using BGP communities is often a way that I see customers manage this. The other thing to be aware of, and I mentioned it with the previous two, route table sizes. You have to ensure that every one of your routers in this case can handle those 600 plus routes that come in via the express route circuit. If they can't, you can upgrade the routers. Obviously, that's going to be a cost. Or you can use BGP communities to limit the routes used. So if you're only using Skype for Business over Express Route, you can limit the routes just to those used by Skype for Business, which should reduce that 600 down to, I don't know, 50 maybe. Or this option isn't for you, and maybe one of the other two would be more suitable. And with that in mind, you've got this Express Route circuit put in, all nicely configured. We can't forget the internet. As Paul mentioned earlier on, the internet is required for data that is not hosted on our data centers in a lot of cases. Some of it is. For various reasons, we use the internet to connect to it. But it's CDN data, scripts, static images on SharePoint pages, things that we can serve you, your clients, quicker from in local CDNs, rather than pull that data from the data center. So we need the internet for that. Office 365 Pro Plus, there's no point downloading that from the data center when you can get it from a CDN, which is probably, you know, a few hops away from the client. So the problem is, if we put all this effort into the express route circuit, we need to be sure that the internet circuit has the same kind of work done on it, that we ensure that that doesn't become the bottleneck. Because if you have a SharePoint page and you have a nicely working express route circuit, if that internet connection is not optimized and is causing a bottleneck, it will cause you performance issues on that SharePoint page for the elements it has to pull in over the internet. So the link at the bottom of that page contains all our planning performance guidance. So it's worth still doing that on your internet pipe, even though it's not as heavily used when you've got ExpressRoute in place. Okay, and with that, I'm going to pass over to Jeff.
All right. Thanks, Paul. So this is a fun section, also known as ways to make your network fail in a catastrophic manner. So asymmetric routes. Before I delve into detail on exactly what I'm talking about, I want to make sure we're all on the same page. So we're going to do a little bit of level setting. So let's talk a little bit about path symmetry. So what I mean here, we can describe in a couple of major categories. So for outbound connectivity, and I'm talking about outbound from the perspective of your network, going outbound to the internet or outbound to Microsoft, you need to ensure for connectivity to our services that the outbound NAT, so the network address translation that's being done at the edge of your network, does not use the same IP address for multiple ways in which that traffic can egress from your systems, right? So if traffic is exiting your network, going over express route to Microsoft, you need to use, and Paul, actually I think both Pauls have mentioned this, you need to ensure that you're using a pool of NAT IPs that does not overlap with other NAT pools elsewhere in your network. Very, very important. The NAT pool that you're advertising to Microsoft, that you're specifying when you configure your express route circuits, cannot be the same NAT pool that you use to actually send traffic out to the internet. Very, very, very critical point. For inbound connectivity, you need to make sure that the network that you respond to requests over, so if a connection comes into your network and you have a server that's going to respond to that, I'm going to show you a couple very specific examples of that in a few minutes, you need to make sure that the response to that, that inbound connection to your network, occurs over the same path. If it doesn't, we start to get challenges. So for traffic that's coming inbound to your network, NATing that traffic is a great way to try and avoid some of these problems. I'll describe specifically what I mean by that and how that helps in a minute. It's not the only way to solve these problems, but as a general best practice, using SourceNAT for that inbound traffic into your network is advised. Okay, so what is asymmetric routing at a very high level? Specifically, traffic is coming into your network from some other network, right? You're responding to that traffic. Network connectivity in one direction doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. So you're going to have an inbound request. You're going to respond to that in some way. And the response for that, for whatever reason, goes out via a different path. Not technically a problem, right? The source and destination IPs are, still valid. And, when that response reaches the other party, technically, from a TCP IP perspective, it's not a problem. Where it becomes a problem is with devices on the edge of your network, stateful firewalls that are actually keeping track of all of these inbound and outbound connections and making decisions about whether to allow things. So typically we have a stateful firewall on the edge of our network, and we're allowing outbound traffic, as an example, for established sessions, right? Or we're allowing traffic to continue for established sessions where we're tracking what those sessions look like. Well, if we end up egressing out over a different link, we're likely gonna be doing that via a different firewall that has no idea what that session is. And so it's gonna do what it should and say, nope, not gonna allow that traffic through. And that is when things go boom. So let's talk about some specific examples. So as Paul Andrew mentioned earlier, we have a number of cases where when you're using Microsoft Peering with ExpressRoute, Microsoft services will reach back into your network in order to provide some sort of service that's associated with Office 365. Exchange Hybrid is a great example of this. It's not the only example. How many of you use Federated Identity, ADFS, or some other third-party solution? Okay. There's another great example of a case where Microsoft services may need to reach back into your network and make requests, right? So in this diagram, let me describe a couple of things about it before I explain the problem that's occurring here. So we have the Microsoft Cloud, we have your internal network, we have the internet in between them, and a couple of express route circuits in between them as well. The blue line, or the big line with an arrow that's going from Microsoft's cloud over the internet into the customer's network is the initial request that's being made. Let's use a federated identity request as an example. So one of Microsoft's servers in one of our data centers is attempting to perform an authentication activity. And so we're reaching out into your STS that you've published on the internet. We're making a request in that direction. It's hitting your perimeter firewall, where you your internet boundary. We're not doing any source NATing at that point in this diagram. Now, that may seem odd. It's fairly typical to do to perform some NATing there. You often have a load balancer or some other device that you're passing through that might be doing NAT. But it's also common for specific scenarios to not perform any NAT there. An example of that might be publishing exchange transport services to the internet, where you actually want to maintain that client IP address for message hygiene purposes, to be able to make decisions about spam and malware. There are other reasons where you might not be doing NATing there. So in this diagram, no NATing happening. The other key point here is that the network, where those servers are that we're actually connecting to make the request, are within the scope of ExpressRoute. What I mean by that is that those servers are sitting on a network, a VLAN, a network that is actually receiving routes for ExpressRoute. So those routes that are coming in via BGP can be seen at that level. That's another very key point here. So in this diagram, we have a request coming in from Microsoft, hitting one of those servers. Server's going to see the source IP as that server at Microsoft. It's going to attempt to respond to it, right? So it does whatever processing it needs. It attempts to send traffic back out to that server at Microsoft. It sees the source IP, makes that the destination IP of that outgoing traffic. Well, because it can actually see that route that's come down from ExpressRoute via BGP, it's going to attempt to use that better route to get that traffic back to Microsoft. We're now going to hit a different perimeter firewall. That perimeter firewall is going to say, oh, I have no idea what this traffic is. Not going to allow it through. And in the case of federated identity, that means you now have users that can't log into services for potentially a not very obvious reason. This is one of the challenges that we get into when people when our customers actually flip the switch and turn this on. We see some very odd failures in some cases that are hard to diagnose, and we want to avoid that as much as possible. So that's why we're spending so much time talking about this. So how do we avoid this? Right, I spent a few minutes talking through specifics of this diagram to kind of set it up. Well, obviously, those specifics are the points that we're gonna go through to explain how to avoid this. So solution number one, source NAT. Right, if I source NAT at the edge, I'm now going to be responding to an IP address of that edge device rather than responding to an IP at Microsoft that's actually coming down via those, that's within scope of those routes that I'm getting from ExpressRoute. So, fairly straightforward solution there, right? I'm going to ensure that I go back out through the same path by actually changing that IP address to be the edge device. Other solution here, change the scope of route propagation within the network. So if those servers that I'm publishing to the internet don't see those routes back over ExpressRoute, they're going to use their default route to the internet or whatever other custom routes are defined on that network. We're not going to have this problem. So Paul talked a little bit about his preferred or his recommended method of deployment, where you're actually only publishing routes essentially to an edge router that's responsible for making a routing decision. We can avoid some of these problems if you deploy in that way. So here's another example where you can get asymmetric routing, totally ignoring the internet path, right? If we have multiple ExpressRoute circuits, we can run into the exact same problem. So we've talked about the need for actually deploying security devices on these paths. So we're deploying stateful firewalls on our ExpressRoute circuits in order to be safe, right? Well, now we have a case where we have multiple ExpressRoute circuits. Connection coming from Microsoft goes over one of those circuits, and we attempt to respond over another one. That's a challenge. source netting is obviously a very good solution for that, a very straightforward way to solve that. So let's talk about Exchange Hybrid, because this is, other than the federated identity case, and federated identity is likely also in play here, but other than that case, Exchange Hybrid seems to be the case where we run into this more often than not. How many of you either are currently running Exchange Hybrid or plan to? Okay, that's why we're talking about it. So I borrowed this slide from my good friend Tim Heaney, who actually presented some of this content as well in his Exchange Hybrid session to make sure we are getting as broad coverage of this topic as we possibly can. I'm going to go through this in as much depth as I possibly can. Essentially, there are there are a number of features that are associated with Exchange Hybrid. When you think about what Hybrid is offering to you, you're getting the ability to have a relatively seamless experience no matter where your mailbox is, either in an on-premises Exchange system or in the cloud. You have the ability to move that mailbox back and forth with little impact to the end user. And users in the organization can collaborate no matter where their mailbox is. So that means doing things like scheduling meetings that involve free busy lookups, sending messages back and forth in a secure manner, being able to basically experience all of the features within Exchange, regardless of where that mailbox exists. So for the federation features that we're talking about, we need connectivity to AutoDiscover, EWS, and the OAuth endpoints within Exchange. Those are the endpoints that you're going to publish from your on-premises Exchange system in a way that Microsoft and our network can reach in order to provide that service. Typically, you would do that over the internet, right? So if you have an on-premises system today, the vast majority of our customers publish Exchange to the internet so that you can be at an event like this, not have to fire up a VPN in order to utilize Exchange. So that's not really that big of a deal, right? You have those things published to the internet. Microsoft is going to reach back into your network and access those over the internet. Well, when you bring ExpressRoute into the picture, then we start having a conversation about how can I use ExpressRoute to manage that traffic rather than having it run over the internet, right? I've paid for ExpressRoute. I've gone through the pain of getting everything designed and configured. I want to be able to use that for as much of this traffic as I possibly can. The challenge with that is that when you publish these services, think about how we're using them. AutoDiscover is going to be the first service that comes into play, right? The service is going to attempt to do AutoDiscover lookups against Exchange, and it's going to go to the AutoDiscover namespace associated with your domain. Well, that's going to do a DNS lookup on public DNS for autodiscover.contoso.com, essentially, and that's going to be associated with an IP address. That IP address is either going to be available on the internet or within that range of IP addresses that you have told Microsoft are IP addresses associated with your ExpressRoute connectivity. If you've done that, we'll actually use ExpressRoute for AutoDiscover. That's fine. We'll go over that circuit to make those AutoDiscover requests. That's a problem if you also have the need to be able to resolve those requests via the internet, because that IP address that we're connecting to, by definition, is not going to be accessible via the internet. We talked earlier about making sure that you have no overlap of those IP addresses between what's published on the internet, what's used on the internet, and what's used over ExpressRoute. So you have to make a decision. Do I want these services to be available over the internet, or do I want to use ExpressRoute for that traffic? So moving on from AutoDiscover, same problem occurs with the namespaces that come back within that AutoDiscover request. So if we're talking about Exchange Web Services, I'm going to get a namespace or a URL that can be used for Exchange Web Services for that particular request. I'm going to do a DNS lookup on that name, and I'm either going to go over ExpressRoute or over the public internet, depending on what that IP address looks like. Exact same thing happening with as I described with AutoDiscover. So we can use ExpressRoute, but it becomes a bit of a trade-off. Mail flow is another example here. So for messaging traffic, for mail, running between Office 365, Exchange Online Protection, and your local Exchange system on your network, that traffic can run over ExpressRoute, or it can run over the internet. But essentially, you need to make a decision here as well. If the namespace that you're going to point to for the connector that Office 365 is going to use to send that traffic resolves to something that's only available over ExpressRoute, then obviously that namespace is not going to be available internally. Now, obviously, we have a little more flexibility here, right? We can set up connectors that are associated with a namespace that might be different than the namespaces that you use for external systems connecting in via the internet. We're not looking at just a single namespace here. So we have a little more flexibility around mail flow. Some of the same problems can still occur, so be aware of that. Client connectivity is a problem as well. So I mentioned that AutoDiscover is a challenge. We publish AutoDiscover to either ExpressRoute or the internet. If we choose to do it via ExpressRoute, we start to have problems with client connectivity over the internet. Well, how many of you only allow access to your on-premises Exchange system if a user connects with VPN? In other words, you're not using Outlook Anywhere or any of that stuff. Yeah, so there's a few. If that's the case, this is not an issue, right? Your users are connecting via VPN, they're coming into your network in a secure manner, and they're seeing Exchange as if they're on the local network. That's fine, right? We can still manage client connectivity in that way. But if you allow clients to connect via the internet, we have a challenge. So if you have external Mac clients that need to be able to connect in, you can't essentially use EWS and AutoDiscover over ExpressRoute, right? You have no way to publish it both ways. Mobile clients, right, same thing. I don't know, honestly, why you would want ActiveSync running over ExpressRoute. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. There isn't really a use case for us reaching into your network over ExpressRoute to use ActiveSync, but maybe I'm not creative enough. Haven't thought of a good reason for that. But if you did publish those namespaces to us over ExpressRoute, you wouldn't be able to use mobile clients. Same story for Outlook and access to public folders or shared mailboxes, where you might have a split. Some of it's on-prem, some of it's in the cloud. In that case, if you're publishing AutoDiscover, Outlook Anywhere, Mappy over HTTP via ExpressRoute, you're not going to be able to hit those over the internet. And then OWA is another example. Again, I honestly don't know why you would do this. You could publish that OWA namespace via ExpressRoute. Maybe you have clients in Azure IaaS. You're spinning up VMs that you want to be able to access OWA over. It's kind of an odd reason, but you could. That would be another case where you wouldn't be able to get to it externally. So be aware of this. In general, as a best practice, the answer for solving all these problems is just publish all this stuff over the internet. Don't try to use ExpressRoute for it. That solves all of these problems, right? So that's the easy way to solve this. I would recommend, as a general statement, don't try to get crazy with designing around these problems. There are potentially some creative ways that you could utilize namespace design, DNS configuration, the behavior that certain clients use with trying to connect to services that are associated with multiple IPs, DNS round robin, et cetera. Avoid doing that if at all possible, right? We want the simplest configuration that you can possibly build, so we'll have a much more reliable system and a system that's much easier to troubleshoot if something goes wrong.
And I think that's a good point in case to feed back to what we were talking about in the previous session around when you're implementing ExpressRoute, it's not just your network team that needs to be involved here. Your Exchange team, which will understand that traffic flow and what will happen if we don't expose X, Y, and Z to the internet, they need to be talking to the network team to make these decisions the right way first time so that you're not cutting off your external users, for example, from their mail.
Yep, absolutely. So we're going to spend a few minutes talking about what I'm calling a preferred architecture for managing client traffic. Client traffic that's coming inbound into our services, potentially over ExpressRoute, potentially over the internet. And preferred architecture I'm using in the same way we do in the on the Exchange team. So Ross Smith has a preferred architecture for deployment for Exchange systems. And we really like to think of that as sort of a North Star. Where we want people to aim, it's not necessarily going to work for everyone. It's a key point, right? It describes best practices. You know, if at all possible, if you can actually deploy in exactly the way that it's specified, that's fantastic. But we recognize that that's not going to be possible because of specific business requirements, requirements from your security teams, requirements you know, from a regulatory perspective, whatever the reason. There may be legitimate reasons to deviate. So I'm going to describe what that preferred architecture looks like at a fairly high level. And this really is the way in which we think you'll have the best experience with the product. So the key thing that we really want to occur, if at all possible, is to avoid, well, Paul Collins mentioned, avoiding proxies, right? We want that direct connectivity, not going through a proxy, for Office 365. We run into lots and lots and lots of customer escalations and issues that can be categorized in a number of different ways. They're performance issues. Sometimes they're functional issues where a service just doesn't work at all, right? Or half doesn't work. You know, you load up a page in SharePoint or something, and you know, some component of that page doesn't work. Those can be hard to diagnose. So in general, we want to avoid those types of devices at your network edge. What this looks like in practice is essentially NAT connectivity, or sorry, you know, NATing behavior at your network edge between your premises and Microsoft, and nothing else. Right, that NAT device, you know, you also have a firewall in there as well, right? Obviously, that NAT device could also be the firewall, but nothing else. How many of you are using products in the Cloud Access Security Broker, CASB space, or Secure Web Gateway? Lots of different names for these technologies. A few. Okay, so we're starting to see more and more of that. There are a lot of products in this space, and a lot of very exciting ways in which they can be used to add value for software as a service solutions like Office 365. Doing things like DLP at your network edge, being able to say, wow, if I see traffic that's associated with a particular keyword, I want to block that connection and ensure that that's not traversing my network and you know, going outside that boundary. Where, you know, we have DLP technology in Office 365, but this is potentially doing it in a different way that's seen as adding some value. From an O365 perspective, from a Microsoft perspective, our message around that is those devices are not required or recommended for Office 365. They can be used in a way that will work correctly with Office 365, but they can also be used in ways that end up providing a very, very bad experience for your end users and for you in dealing with escalations, and then for potentially us in dealing with your escalations to Microsoft. Of particular concern are solutions that actually terminate SSL at the edge so that they can get visibility into that traffic that we have secured in order to protect you. You know, you're breaking that that SSL layer in order to see the underlying traffic. Those types of solutions are the ones that we get very concerned about, that cause a lot of issues for our customers. So the way I like to think of this is sort of a range of risk. If you think about one side of it being, you know, your old traditional internet proxy, where your clients are connecting, clients are telling the proxy where to go to, you know, to perform a request, you know, whatever the URL is, the proxy is going to go grab that on behalf of the client. That's a fairly low risk activity, right? We're not really worried about that. And we, you know, you're likely not breaking SSL in that type of design. Perfectly fine to use that. You know, we'd like you to avoid it if you can, but we don't expect it to cause problems generally for O365. Then when we start going over to the other side of the scale, that's when we start to have issues. Where you're actually terminating connections, you're analyzing the traffic within those packets in order to make decisions, that's where things become challenging and where our workloads start to see problems. We don't test with any of these products in place. So honestly, we have no idea what's going to happen. We can't make any, you know, sorts of guarantees or, you know, SLA statements about, you know, how things will work when those products, you know, are put in the traffic path. So if you do deploy those products, be prepared that if you need to troubleshoot things with Microsoft, you're likely going to be asked by Microsoft support to bypass or disable or, you know, do something in order to ensure that that device is not causing the problem. So just be aware of that. You do have options, though, in this space if you're interested in actually managing that client traffic and managing what users are doing. So there are products in this space that actually integrate with our Management Activity API, which is a stream of data that that we provide to you know, anyone really that writes a client for this API about what your users are doing, what documents they're accessing, what actions they're performing on those documents. That data can then be used to make decisions about, you know, whether or not a user is doing the right thing without actually impacting the network stream. Important to take a look if you need to deploy a solution of this type, whether or not that solution actually can integrate with Office 365 in this way rather than integrating at the network layer. I also point out, as the last bullet on the slide, we actually see customers who deploy devices that are specifically designed to ensure that client activity coming from their premises into Microsoft services is actually managed in a way that you might manage traffic coming into your network for services that you publish to the internet, in order to ensure that you know, that you're not overwhelming those systems. We don't need you to protect our systems from your users. We do a very good job of that, and we have a lot of very intelligent throttling built into our products, very intelligent monitoring at the network layer that's built into our products. We don't need that extra complication. Keep it simple. That's the goal, okay? So that's actually the extent of the content that we have.
All right. And we have almost 15 minutes to take questions. But before we do, I really want to thank you all for coming along. We're very passionate, obviously, about cloud networking and getting people great connectivity into Office 365 and Microsoft data centers. So thank you for coming along and listening today. If you have follow-up questions, I'll volunteer my Twitter account is at PNDRW if you want to contact me and ask. But we'll be here for questions. We'd love for you to come up to the mics, and there's some people doing that already. Thank you, so that we can get those in the recording. Go ahead.
I have a question regarding a situation when a customer decides to go away on express route without proxy, and the other way for that CDN networks and Jammer and other services which are not available for express route but on internet traffic, that traffic obviously will have to go over traditional internet proxy. How do we scale that proxy, because we know that number of connections which can be which can be utilized by single client. How do we scale that proxy? How many connections can we expect from single user to different services, to the CDN networks, to Jammer, to?
So that's always a difficult question. I mean, we can give you a rough idea per service. But the best thing to do is monitor your pilot users and extrapolate that data out, because each user's use case will be completely different. You know, a normal user with Outlook might have 2 to 4, if you're using a modern version of Outlook, 2 to 4 TCP sessions. But an executive PA might have 10, depending on what they've got open. So monitoring of your pilot users and the number of connections coming from a particular IP address via a particular egress, that is your best way of building up a model for how much is required.
Okay, and thank you. And the other question is regarding that SSL inspections and stuff which traditional internet proxy has to do. If content for SharePoint, let's say, is being delivered from CDN networks, and if my traditional internet proxy is doing all that stuff, will it break my SharePoint page, which is delivered over the express route.
No, I mean, if you're pulling stuff from CDNs, will it break your SharePoint page? No, that's how SharePoint's designed to work, and your proxy will, however it's designed to work, as long as it's not causing a bottleneck. That's the thing. Make sure it's not causing a delay to the delivery of that image, that script, whatever it is. Then SharePoint is designed to work of that manner. That's exactly why we need the internet pipe as well as the express route pipe in this scenario.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, one of the other...
Yep, thank you. So I've got at least four or five customers struggling with the express route scenario, and they are global customers and large customers. And what I know right now with the message that I heard in this presentation is that until and unless they have a true case for Skype for Business Enterprise Voice, probably express route is not the right way to go for. But the challenge is that they have got several remote locations where the ingress internet point is extremely slow. And at least one of those customers have been on BPOS D, Office 365 dedicated for the last several years. So they already had that MPLS connection to the Microsoft data center from that point of view. Mm-hmm. Now they're struggling here and say, hey, what do we do here? Because we have these remote sites which has got a very slow internet connection. And these end users have experienced the BPOS D from that side. What is the recommendation? Should we go and think about express route? Should we just completely abolish the idea or do a little bit more investigation around it?
Right. So firstly, for your BPOS D customer, there's a very small number of customers who are in that situation, and a lot of them have direct networking to Microsoft already. We'll work with them individually and make sure that they get the solution that they need, whether it be ExpressRoute or whatever they need to do. So those are relatively easy to work with, and they all have dedicated Microsoft Service Delivery Managers who work with them. So as long as you get in touch with that Service Delivery Manager, that can be taken care of. For the other customers that you're talking about who have very poor internet connectivity, I would first want to look at, well, do you have an express route provider who can get better network connectivity? Presuming you do, and then you have a strong business case why the customer would need to get express route, i.e. they can't connect on the internet, it's impossible. They can connect with express route. I know in some geos there are these situations where even though internet and direct networking are typically the same cables, there are still reasons why that just doesn't work out. Work with the Microsoft account team that is responsible for Office 365 with the customer and ask them to escalate and request, even though they're outside of these scenarios that we talked about, if there's business benefit there, have a discussion about it, ask them to escalate, ask them to review and get that discussed with the people doing that.
And last question. I mean, let's say we have the express route established and took all 6 months of pain to configure all that stuff, right? I'm sorry.
6 months of an exciting implementation project.
Here you go.
So Teleworks in marketing.
So, but how much is that? I also heard that there is a kind of a daily manual intervention on because of the dynamic subnet being used behind, especially for Office 365 workload. How much is that work? Let's say we all did a phenomenal job, established the express route. What is that daily operation effect on that side?
Oh, do you mean what is the impact on your IT operations people?
Right. What I know so far, and maybe I got it wrong, that because these IP, these are dynamic subnets and dynamic IPs, they keep changing. So every day, depending on the changes, you still have to go and make those manual changes on a daily basis, daily basis.
Got it. So there should be no ongoing operational work for ExpressRoute. Once you're set up, you're through this implementation work, there should be nothing you need to do on an ongoing basis, particularly for IP addresses. If we add IP addresses to our service, and Office 365 is growing just enormously all the time, we will automatically add those into the BGP routes that are propagated and advertised to your network.
Automate.
So there's no work that you have to do for that.
Okay.
This is why we were saying don't use that URL and IP page, because that is where you will need to do work and be very quick with it. Whereas if you use those BGP routes to manage that, that's how BGP works. It should
yep.
automatically
broadcast and bulk, yeah, the routes. I got it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just a key point there. We actually do see escalations from customers who experience loss of service with O365 because rather than actually relying on those that route propagation via BGP, they're actually manually approving changes to
those
routing tables, and it can be very difficult to keep up with that.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, back over here.
Hey, guys. So I work for a fairly large company, many remote sites, and none of our sites typically allow direct outbound internet. We require going through a proxy pretty much everywhere. And we're using a cloud-based proxy. It's called Zscaler. And we've deployed Office 365. We're in the process of rolling out Skype for Business. We haven't run into any issues going through the proxy. Everything seems to be working well. But you're getting me a little scared telling me, you know, proxy's not recommended for anything. We haven't run into too many performance issues with Skype for Business, but we only have a small pilot group, about 50 users. So we wanted to know what you guys recommend as far as continuing with our path with deploying Skype for Business using the Zscaler proxy, or should we entertain either going direct outbound? We could use the proxy.pack and point them at a direct outbound, or use like the express route or something.
So when we talk about proxies, it's just not our recommended way of connecting. All our services will work through proxies, and if everything is perfect, then Skype for Business will work pretty well through a proxy. But in my advice, when I talk to customers about Zscaler provides localized services, and when you can't, you know the reasons why you'd use Zscaler, so you don't want localized proxies to manage yourself, et cetera, Exchange and SharePoint should work relatively well through those proxies. Zscaler generally are very well connected to Microsoft's network. That end-to-end connectivity piece should be checked, but it should be okay. My advice around Skype for Business would be to look at direct networking for Skype for Business. So this might be a use case for ExpressRoute where you can still use Zscaler, but the ExpressRoute connection can be used for Skype for Business to enable direct networking. And you could use the BGP communities to separate or to manage that. Or the other option is look at a direct networking egress where you bypass that POX proxy for the Skype IP address ranges, URLs that we manage.
I think that's been the trouble that we've been able to find is we can't seem to zone in on the specific names or IP addresses that we should be using to redirect just the Skype for Business traffic to go direct outbound, let everything else go through Zscaler.
They're listed on the URL and IP page under the Skype for Business section.
Okay, and that's going to stay static. So if we wanted to, we could just customize our pack file and say for these addresses, send them out this way. For everything else, go to Zscaler.
They're not static, though. You need to keep an eye on them. And there's an RSS feed that will flag when it's been changed. So if anything is added, we might add IP ranges to add new services. You need to keep on top of those. So it's not static, but that is manageable. And that would be the end goal in my case. If you can get Skype end-to-end direct, you're going to get the best call meeting quality rather than go through a proxy.
Right. If you can't do that, don't want to do that, have a conversation with Zscaler about how transparent are they to Skype for Business. What exactly do they do? And just learn and understand what that is and how that's going to be different from going out direct.
Okay. So in the end, we're okay using Zscaler, but you guys are recommending for Skype for Business, pipe it out either direct, or if direct is not sufficient, then entertain ExpressRoute.
Yeah. I think what we're saying is we haven't tested those devices in our service. We haven't tested any of those proxy servers or proxy devices. We obviously know our service runs with standard routers, firewalls, NAT devices, but we have seen issues with some proxy devices, and they are very difficult to troubleshoot.
And
that sort of comes back to be a bit careful with those messages that we're giving today.
And the key thing to remember with Skype is Exchange and SharePoint are designed to work over TCP, which generally is what proxies will deal with. Skype for Business is designed to work with UDP because it's much better at delivering real-time traffic. We lose packets along the way, we don't care, we can discard them, you'll never notice in the call quality. But when you use a proxy, you're going to force Skype to go over TCP, which means we have to deliver every packet. If there's a bottleneck anywhere along the way, that's going to start to really cause audible issues or issues with your video, which wouldn't be obvious when you were using UDP. So that's the differentiator here, that Skype would prefer its best quality can be delivered over UDP. And with using a proxy, you're forcing it over TCP in most cases.
Cool. Good info. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. Go ahead. Go for it.
That's good because I have a similar situation where we use, everything we go on the internet goes through proxy. Now we have installed ExpressRoute. It's not live yet because we're struggling with putting all this stuff that's supposed to go through ExpressRoute in our proxy exception list, basically. And is that basically your pack file that you're going to submit? You're going to keep that updated and we can just reuse that one?
I'll give you a card. Come up and get a card when we finish and I'll email it to you. It should be live next week at the latest. But yes, you can use that pack file. It's very clear. These URLs go ExpressRoute. Anything else has to go to proxy.
And then the other thing with the with that large IP website, I mean, where you get the RSS feeds, there's one bit where you have the a large list of IPs for certain, for I think it was the infrastructure services, and half of it says this is being used through ExpressRoute, and the other half is only public internet. Do you still need both? I mean, do you?
Do you mean the column that says express routable or depend? Because both, everything in that page is routable via the internet. Everything in Office 365 is accessible over the internet. There's nothing that is constrained to express route. Express route is just a second route to that same endpoint.
Right. But going back to the recommendation to not have certain traffic go through proxy, because right now we have stupid firewall rules for to be able to have Skype go directly to the internet and not go through proxy, where we have to maintain those rules with those IPs from that sheet. Uh-huh. Do we still need to maintain the ones for that are only available on public internet if we have ExpressRoute? Do you need to have both available to you?
We don't split the IP. Every IP in that list is routable via the internet.
Right.
I know what you're asking, but we don't list the IPs that are express routable. I don't know if that's a piece of work being done. We don't differentiate them. It's services, and those IP ranges move about, they change, and it's pretty much impossible for us to do that. So the routing has to be done on a URL lookup level and use the BGP routes if you're using express route to manage that. So that's why if you use that example where you've got an edge router that has view of the BGP circuit, it can make a decision based on the endpoint IP address which way that goes. We can't publish these IPs will be express route. You can split the traffic on a URL level but not an IP level. Does that answer your question?
Not,
come up and we'll have a more detailed discussion.
Go ahead.
I got a client that has an express route in the US and one in EMEA. And when we started moving to Exchange Online, we set up the O365 peering on the European circuit, which worked well. It was back in March, I guess. And now he realized, well, we should place that on the US one as well. But unfortunately, the policy around this O365 peering has changed dramatically over the last 3 months from, well, you can have it, to now you need an assessment. So, I have it in Europe now. How do I get it in the US enabled with that policy now in place from your end?
You're not required to have an assessment if you already have it as part of your network. So you already have an ExpressRoute connection with Microsoft peering. You will have to make a request to Microsoft, to your account manager, but there's no review process or anything. You're already... We've seen that you've done it right and it's working, right? So we don't want to get in the way of you being able to turn that on for anywhere else in your network.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, but as you pointed out, because it is a technical block in there, you will have to ask, and you presumably have a different Azure subscription ID for the US. Is it right?
No. It's just the ExpressRoute.
Okay, if you have the same Azure subscription ID in the US and in Europe, then you can just turn it on. It is enabled per Azure subscription ID. So that's
okay. Perfect. Thanks.
Yep.
So we enable the BGP model that you described, and the only question I had was around the community values. So I heard you mention them a couple of times, and we'd like to get to a point where we can say that we can support production type deployments in it. But that feature still says EA. So if we go to support, if something were to happen, would we get the support we need?
What we have today, it is still in preview, but you can get support to provide help. So that part of concern shouldn't worry about that.
Okay.
Support will help you with the BGP community tags, even though it still says preview.
If they don't, Twitter Paul.
Yeah.
I got his info. Thank you.
I gave you my card, didn't I?
So a specific question to ExpressRoute and Skype for Business Online. If I want to bring in BGP routes only for Skype for Business, do you guys advertise a specific community or any value?
Yes, we do. Yes, we have a specific community tag for Skype for Business.
Okay, so,
so that you can have only those routes for that are required for Skype for Business advertised to your network.
So I don't have to filter by IP, basically.
No. No, please don't filter our routes.
Great.
Makes things more complicated.
Second question is, so I understood that for Skype for Business online, and if you use ExpressRoute, you're still going to have a dependency on internet, correct? So you will depend both on internet and on your ExpressRoute circuit.
You're still going to have a dependency on internet, but most of your traffic, your voice, video, meeting traffic, will go over that ExpressRoute connection. We won't be able to operate without internet connectivity. So we have had some customers who want to turn off all internet connectivity for their users, and you can't do that.
Okay, so if internet breaks, Skype for Business Online breaks, basically.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It depends what's...
Depends on what service.
I think Skype for Business, there's relatively little which requires the internet. Without the URL and IP list open, I couldn't tell you, but just from the top of my head, I don't think Skype for Business relies on the internet very much. It's more SharePoint and to a lesser extent Exchange.
DNS would be a concern.
DNS, obviously, yes, good point.
Yeah, we have had a few customers. This is not a supported piece of work. We've had a few customers who've gone down that path of saying, I want to have high availability for when there's an internet outage, and I want my users to still get to their mail, still get to Skype, still get to SharePoint. There's ways you can go about doing that. We don't have a supported plan to share, but I imagine that you would want to look at something like, okay, well, let's test an outage, see what doesn't work, go fix that so that it is more highly available without the internet being there. There are ways of backing up all of these services one way or another.
So you've already gone through use cases where that failover mechanism works?
I'm saying we haven't.
You haven't?
We haven't published it, but I've heard from a few customers who've wanted to do that and started to provide higher availability for some of those things because, you know, they don't have an SLA with their internet service provider for internet. And so just trying to make sure that they get the highest possible availability. It's something that is possible to work on, but not something that Microsoft has a process or plan or documentation to help you with directly. You would be working at the network layer and making sure, okay, first, DNS. How do I make DNS work without an internet connection? Okay, do that. What's the next thing?
Right. Thank you.
Yep. All right, I think we exhausted the questions. We're well out of time. Thank you so much for coming along.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.